Good morning, everybody. Hi. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Hey, welcome back. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5 a.m. Jake the Snake Roberts is going to join us this morning to talk about his tour. He's going to be playing it. He's going to be speaking at Zany's at the Unspoken Word Tour. Legendary wrestler Jake the Snake will be joining us later on. We're going to play another round of Wood Esmeralda by that as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. It's Triple Play Thursday, so get your requests in. Triple Play Thursday, one artist, three songs. You pick them, 312-981-7200. My first guest is a regular on the show. He joins us every couple of weeks to talk TV. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. His name is Dan Feinberg, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. And we're here to talk all things TV. We welcome Dan back to the show. Hi, Dan.
How are you doing, Nick?
All right. How are you?
I'm doing well. Holding it together after premiere week into premiere week number two. It keeps going.
Right. I watched a bunch of premieres in preparation for this visit. Some new stuff as well. But before we get to the new stuff, did you see this week's episode of Atlanta?
Yes, and it was absolutely terrific.
Unbelievable.
I would say, my favorite of the ones that have aired.
Yeah,
so far.
Me too. And the show just keeps getting better and better. I think it's the best thing on TV. That episode, I just was astounded by how good it was, just on every single level.
I liked that it was kind of, to some degree, three little short arty films squished together, but that you can look at the three little arty short films and you can see what the thematic overlap was. And it was also, I would say, funnier than some of the episodes have been. Some of them have been maybe less funny. This one was very funny.
Oh, it was I think it was absolutely the funniest episode of the season thus far. I laughed out loud a lot during it. I just really love this show, and I'm just so thrilled to know that Donald Glover is allowed to show this side of him that I've never seen this kind of thing before from him. And it's just a triumph, I think. And I'm so thrilled that it's already been renewed for a second season.
Oh, for sure. And it's doing great. And also last week's episode of Better Things, the Lenny Kravitz episode
was great.
The best episode that show has had. So, those two are hitting on all cylinders and worth watching. And for people who watch You're the Worst, it had its best episode of the season on Wednesday night. So really, FX at this point has an awful lot of very, very good comedies going at this point that are worth your attention.
Yeah, I'm the more stuff that FX does, the more I really admire that network. I mean, they're allowing people to do what they want to do and take some chances, and they're putting on very unconventional shows, especially in the comedy department. And I think what they're doing is great.
Without any question, and even the things that don't necessarily work, most of them tend to be admirable. Like, I understand why they want to have Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll on, at least somewhat, even though it does less than nothing for me. I didn't understand why they wanted to have Tyrant on the drama side, but I understand why they want to have The Strain on, even if it's been kind of crazy and a bit of a dumpster fire this season. FX pretty reliably does things that are worthy of consideration, and they do have a comedy brand which pretty much says, we don't care if anyone's watching, because if we do stuff that's special and unique, some people will watch and other people will find it down the road, and that seems to work for them.
Yeah, and for those people who are not watching Atlanta, catch up on demand. It's five episodes in, and it is it's an extraordinary piece of television. There's no question about it. And again, very, as we talked about last time, Dan, very difficult to describe to people. But
and this week's as well. I mean, even if we tried telling people why this week's episode was so good, I don't think we would do an adequate job.
Right.
So
yeah,
and we'd end up giving away the kind of the quote unquote big jokes.
I purposely wanted to be vague about it in case people didn't see it, because it's there's some real jaw droppers in it. But anyway, great stuff. Better Things is on my DVR from last night, and I'll watch it in the morning when I get home from this week. So have you seen this week's episode?
I have not seen this week's episode. No, I'm hand to mouth on almost everything at this point. It's I'm trying to get ahead on a couple things that are coming ahead, but then I fall behind on 15 different things and have to spend the weekend catching up on the week before. And then it turns out there are 15 new shows coming to different streaming services that I either have or haven't had the time to see. It's kind of
Okay. Well, let's talk about some of the premieres that have taken place over the past week or so. Let's start with one that I loved that I watched last week, and that's Pitch.
Okay.
I was a sucker for it. I was hook, line, and sinker from the moment it started. Tell everybody about Pitch, and what did you think of the premiere? You liked it, right?
I did. I haven't had the time yet to watch the second and third episodes that have been made available for critics, so I'm only up to what the people have seen. And yeah, it's the story of the first female major leaguer. She's a pitcher, Ginny Baker, played by Kyle Bunbury, who I like to forget was on at least one, possibly two seasons of Under the Dome. It seems like the kindest thing I can do to forget that ever occurred and to refer to her as newcomer, Kylie Bunbury. So I think she'd appreciate that because okay. She's great here and no one was great in Under the Dome. So. So basically it's what would happen if a young woman were called up to the major leagues. And, you know, the character has been written as not this kind of prodigy or superstar. This is not a rookie of the year. She broke her arm and now she throws 110 miles per hour. She throws in the mid-80s, which is faster than most women can throw in baseball pitching, as opposed to softball, with a different style and mound distance. But she has a tricky screwball, and that's vaguely realistic in the major leagues currently. I believe there's one pitcher who utilizes a screwball regularly, right. So it would be something that would be a deviation from the norm. And so, yeah, it's about the pressure that she's under. It's about how teammates react, how managers, GMs, how basically the press reacts, everybody. And it's an underdog sports story. And it made me tear up repeatedly both of the two times I've watched the pilot. It works. And that's all I ask from something like this, is if it's trying to make me weepy, does it? And the answer is yes.
I'm with you 100% on it. Like I said, I ate it all up. And you know, the relationship with her father is really beautifully handled. And of course, if you're going to do an underdog baseball movie, you got to have some sort of relationship with a father in it. That's just that's important in the world of baseball. So. But I really liked it.
I think it makes it sort of realistic in the sense that it becomes his dream, and it sort of is how he basically didn't have the son he wanted, who wanted to be a baseball star, but he had a daughter who showed an interest, and he decided to basically push her along in a dream that maybe wasn't her dream, and now what does she do that she's achieved it? I think, you know, it raises good questions, and there's a lot of material that it should be able to play with if it continues to work.
Yeah, and I really, really, really like Marc-Paul Gaultier in it. I think he's great. And at first I didn't even recognize him.
Zach Morris is hidden behind some extra pounds of muscle and non-muscle. He put on weight for the role because he's playing an all-star catcher mid to late in his career, and so he would not be felt in Marc-Paul Gosselaar shape, so he put on some weight, he grew a big old bushy beard,
yep.
and he doesn't look immediately recognizable, and I think he's really good. I think it's a good part for him, probably a better part than most he's had really in recent memory.
Yeah, I think he's terrific in it, and again, I was like, is that Zach? When I was watching him, like, what? And because he looks like a baseball player, you know what I mean? I mean, he really does. I mean, physically, he did a great job, you know, fitting into the role. I mean, he looks like a pro catcher.
Well, I think the show has done a very good job with authenticity. They have Major League Baseball's seal of approval, and
yep.
We'll see if that sort of restricts the roads that they can go down and the different wasp's nest that they can poke.
Yeah.
And we'll see if they have to obviously be curbing some of the more, I don't know, timely topics. You know, how deep are they going to be able to go into performance-enhancing drugs, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But at least short-term, they're wearing the right uniforms. They're actually mentioning real baseball teams. The opening episode was filmed in Petco Park in San Diego.
Yep.
It looks right. It feels right.
Yep, I agree. I totally agree. A really great new show called Pitch. Do you think that Fox would be pretty smart to advertise the hell out of it during the playoffs in the World Series, right?
Oh, I mean, they certainly will do the best they can. The question is if when it gets to be 3 or 4 weeks from now, when it gets to actually be baseball postseason time on Fox, where are the ratings for Pitch going to be? Yeah. It did not premiere very strongly. It premiered low, at least in large part, because no one wanted to watch Rosewood, which was its lead-in, which is on Fox for renewing a show that nobody cared about at all.
I've never even seen an episode. I've never seen an episode of Rosewood.
It's a show basically premised on the notion that Morris Chestnut is a very, very handsome man and that people will be willing to watch him do things because of that, which, you know, whatever. I'm not too proud to admit that Morris Chestnut is a good-looking dude.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
But it doesn't require... It required a little bit more show than that, and in the few episodes I watched last season before I said, no, I don't need to watch this anymore, it didn't have anything more than that, and I don't know why it got renewed, and it did very poorly and probably dragged Pitch down.
That's too bad. Well, people should watch Pitch. It's on Thursday nights on Fox, and you should... And it's a really, I think, a really terrific show, just based on the first episode. Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, we got a lot more TV to talk about. It's premiere weeks here on the television world. And Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter joins us. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Prince, F-I-E-N. We got the news coming up, and after that, more TV talk here on 720 WGN. Oh, yeah. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower here till 5. And we're talking TV with Dan Feinberg. He is the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Prince, F-I-E-N. And we're talking TV, and we welcome Dan back. Welcome back, Dan.
Howdy do.
All right. So since we're on Fox, I watched a couple...
You covered the good ones.
Okay.
So now which direction are you going?
Well, I watched The Exorcist, I fully admit it's trash. Okay, but I think it's fun trash. I really do. It's just trash, and I can understand. I can totally understand why people would hate it and think it's stupid. But it's for me. It was. I had a lot of fun watching it, despite the fact that it was just kind of crap.
I'm gonna need you to go into more detail. What did you find fun about that pilot?
Well, I just thought it was. You know, I mean, I like the exorcism, the guy who the old, because both of these guys are relatively new, right? The guy who plays the young priest who's having the crisis, and the older priest who's the experienced. He's got the Max von Sydow role, and the other guy's got the Jason Miller role. Who's the guy who's got the Max von Sydow role?
I'm going to pull these names up because, as you say, they are.
Oh, okay.
I believe it's Ben Daniels who has the.
Yeah, that's his name. Yeah.
Yeah, and he basically chews scenery for a living, which he does reasonably well. He was on Starz's ballet miniseries Flesh and Blood, Flesh and Bone, whichever one was not the Gwyneth Paltrow movie, last year, and he chewed a lot of scenery in that one. And, I think he's good at that. So, you know, don't some actors are small, some actors are big. He happens to be a big actor, but I don't mind watching him. And Alfonso Herrera plays the other, the younger.
Tomas, he plays Father Tomas. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, okay. I happen to be like a huge, you know, horror is my favorite genre. I happen to love horror movies, and I love stuff that's creepy and gross and all that stuff. And I think it achieved some success on that trashy level. I thought the exorcism scenes were ridiculous and entertaining. I thought the scene in the attic was hilarious. I did.
But was it supposed to be hilarious?
No, but that's what I'm saying. I know it's trash, and I'm liking it in that way that I fully acknowledge that this is not great, but I was having a good time just watching. And just the fact that that kind of craziness is on Fox at 8 o'clock, I don't know, somewhere deep inside my recesses, it pleases me.
I'm just so perplexed what it is as a series, and I have no answer for that after watching the pilot a couple times, but also having, you know, been at TCA press tour and listened to the producers talk about it. I just don't have a sense of what the show is and what it's going to be week to week.
It seems to, now I looked it up on IMDb because as I was watching it, as we were just discussing, Dan, I had no idea who the two leads were. I mean, obviously, Gina Davis, we know who Gina Davis is, but I had no idea who anybody else was. So I rolled up on the old IMDb, and everybody is credited with only five episodes. Is this only a five-episode run?
No, just don't trust Iron Man.
Oh, okay.
That would be the cleanest and neatest way to put it. No, I believe they're under the impression it could actually be 22 episodes per season, makes no sense whatsoever.
So
let's just pretend, though. It's 13, I think. I think the initial order is a standard 13, and either they'll feel like they need more or they won't. And since it didn't do especially well in its premiere, because how could it possibly do especially well on Friday nights on Fox?
Right.
I would not expect it to be 22 episodes a season, but I'll watch this Friday's episode just to see, I don't know, what it looks like going forward. I'm curious. You know, I kind of liked Alan Ruck because I thought he was kind of acting, and I appreciated that.
Yeah.
You know, Gina Davis wants a paycheck, and that's, you know, good for her. I feel like she should have something better than this, but... You know,
well,
what
it,
can you do?
It's the thing is, if it's going to be just this, you know, the one of the daughters is possessed, or maybe both, I don't know yet, in the house, and this is just a one, you know, like every week, are they just going to just do an exorcism on this girl every week and for 22 episodes?
My impression is that it is going to be focusing on this main case for however long at least the first season is. So, you know, get used to it. They did promise it was not going to be an exorcism of the week situation, and at least there's that, because it was going to be ridiculous if that's what it happened to be. But, no, I don't know. And, I did think that the pilot looked good, but I thought it looked good in large part because it probably cost a lot of money to make, and there was a lot of time. And I think that Rupert Wyatt is a fairly talented director.
Yeah,
He directed
Rise of the Planet of the Apes, so he automatically gets a pass in my book.
No, I think he's talented, and so I think that helps the pilot in a way that probably subsequent episodes won't be helped.
Oh yeah.
So I am not hugely excited, but I really do try to give everything at least a couple episodes. And so I've been watching second episodes of things this week, and I've been beginning the process of starting to ditch things. Like, for example, the second episode of Kevin Can Wait was enough that I will not need to watch a third. And the second episode of Bull was enough that I do not need to watch a third.
Okay. So. All right. Well, at the very end of this, the pilot of The Exorcist, you know, when he looks out, he throws the rat into the garbage can, he looks over, and there's the creepy little girl in the window smiling, and then Tubular Bells starts. I just started laughing.
And that was the only part I liked, because Tubular Bells at least plays, you know.
Yeah,
Tubular
yeah.
Bells, it does what it needs to do. It hits home. And if you're only going to be able to use Tubular Bells or really anything Exorcist-related actually from the awesome, awesome movie as like occasional punctuation or spite, then it's not really worth it to me, unfortunately.
It's funny. By the way, I'm hosting a screening of The Exorcist Tuesday night at a movie co-theater here in Rosemont. And it's like the extended director's cut. We're very excited about it. It's going to be fantastic.
It is an
amazing movie. But they, you know, like it's within the first 3 minutes of the pilot, they kind of covered visually. They kind of covered everything that you needed to cover. There was steps. There were dogs barking and fighting, and there was looking up at a window. Where there's like weird, horrible noises and clearly something creepy, a glowing window. And that's the first 2 minutes of the show. And I was like, okay, well, you've covered, you got all the visual cliches out of the way in 3 minutes, you know.
And now what? Basically.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to something good. I really enjoy This Is Us.
That's because I think it is, again, just like if you like underdog sports movies and you like that kind of manipulation, people will like Pitch.
And by the way, Dan really likes it too. Dan, my producer, Dan.
I love the manipulation.
Yeah, we both love the manipulation.
It's what it's there for. And so similarly, if you really liked shows like Parenthood that really, really tried to make you cry a little, to make you laugh a little, to give you some quality acting from people, you know, just giving good, solid performances, and there aren't that many shows like that on TV, then, yeah, I think that's what This Is Us is built for, and I feel good about it on that level.
Tell
and,
everybody and about I it, like, though. Give yeah. everybody the background on it and tell everybody what
well,
it's about.
Both Pitch and This Is Us are both created or co-created by Dan Fogelman, who some people will know from Gallivant or other things. And it's This Is Us is a tough one to explain because while we are a week and a bit past the premiere, it is still a show where the premise is built around a twist that I'm not sure if it's supposed to be spoiled or not. But there are a lot of people, they share the same birthday, a lot of great actors, including Sterling K. Brown, Milo Ventimiglia. Okay, maybe he's not a great actor, but sometimes he's a good actor. Mandy Moore, who I thought is really good so far in the first two episodes of this, so maybe she is a great actor. I don't know. And then other various people, including Ron Cephas Jones, who people should learn to recognize because he's in Luke Cage, which premieres this Friday, and he is everywhere this fall. So Ron Cephas Jones, y'all, everyone should know him. But yeah, it's about people who have connections, and some of them are related, and some of them might be, and basically they're living their lives, and with some drama, some comedy, and some melodrama.
It's you know, I have a weakness for interlocking stories. My favorite movie of all time is Magnolia, and I have a weakness for that kind of thing. You know what I mean? It's just something that really speaks to me. I really enjoy that sort of setup. So I, you know, this interconnecting characters and stuff like that is something that I have a weakness for.
Did you watch the second episode yet?
No, not yet.
Okay. The second episode continues somewhat, with the interlocking and quote unquote twist or surprise at the end. And I found the second episode good, but I found the twist of the second episode to be much less satisfying, I would say. And so it left me a little bit more concerned than the pilot did. But I like so many of these actors, and I like seeing so many of them just getting the chance to do this kind of show where it's, you know, it's very human stakes, and it's very grounded, and it feels real and grounded in a nice way that I appreciate.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good stuff. It's called This Is Us. And it's on because I watched it on my DVR. What night is it on? It's a Wednesday.
I was gonna say, who even knows anymore?
Tuesdays. Tuesdays.
Tuesday. There we go.
Okay.
Tuesday. So yeah, Tuesdays on NBC at 10 p.m.
Okay. Tuesdays on. Well, they'd be 9 o'clock here. So Tuesdays. Yeah. On NBC at 9 o'clock. It's called This Is Us, and I recommend it. And so does my producer Dan, and our friend Dan Feinberg also recommends it. Okay, Dan, hang on. All right.
Sure.
All right, we're going to come back and talk more TV. The new season is among us, has started, so we're going to talk more television. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He's great. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we'll talk more TV after we take this break on 720 WGN. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, Triple Play Thursday, so get your requests in, one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. And we're talking with Dan Feinberg, who joins us every couple of weeks to talk TV. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can check him out on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much.
All right. You know, I saw one of your tweets is that O.J. Made in America is going to be back in theaters. Do we know when that's going to happen?
It's going to be in a number of different theaters basically through October. So I'm not sure on city by city. There are at least 10 cities that are getting theatrical re-releases of it. And in its theatrical form, apparently it has two intermissions. So you can get popcorn and go to the bathroom because that's a long old movie. But I like that they're doing this because it serves as a reminder as we approach award season, basically, that this is eligible and that ESPN would really like people to remember that it's being treated as both a movie and a TV show. So come late December, it can be everybody's number one thing of the year. So, you know, they're greedy and they want to get the Oscars and they want to get the documentary Oscar in February or March. Then they want to get the long form documentary Emmy come next fall. They want to get the TCA Award for Program of the Year next July. They just want to get whatever awards they can get for OJ Made in America. And fortunately, OJ Made in America is fantastic, and therefore I am all for getting whatever recognition they can force people to find.
Yeah, I agree. And we'll keep you posted on if it's coming to Chicago and where and when and all that stuff. But OJ Made in America is as we've talked about it before. It's not the OJ FX OJ show. It's a different thing. It's an actual documentary, and it's one of the best. I think one of the best documentaries I've ever seen in my life. It just is an astounding piece of work.
It is fantastic. Let me see. Okay, Chicago. It will be at the Gene Siskel Film Center on Saturday, October 22nd at 12:30 p.m. and basically going for the rest of the darn day.
Okay. All right. So at the Siskel Center, October 22nd, get there and prepare yourself for a long day, but in a long, rewarding, incredible day. So there you go. Thank you for that information.
I'm glad I was able to find the press release.
Tell us about, you know, in a similar kind of vein, tell us about the, I haven't watched the case of JonBenet Ramsey on CBS since we're talking documentaries and stuff like that. Tell everybody about that.
Let's keep this one very simple because I didn't watch the second half of it. It was basically everybody is trying to capitalize on this being the 20th anniversary of the JonBenet's 25th, whatever it is, trying to capitalize on an anniversary of a child murder. So once you put it that way, everyone should feel, frankly, a little bit disgusted by the whole thing, and everybody is doing it. So ID had a JonBenet thing. CBS had a JonBenet thing. Everybody's just, you know, they're going through, they're picking over the bits and pieces of the evidence. Some of them are trying to find a new interview or two to kind of justify their reasons for being. The CBS one pointed its finger basically completely and totally at JonBenet's brother. It's, I don't know, this whole thing is, it's tawdry, and there's so much, but I think Lifetime has a TV movie that's coming up about JonBenet's mother, sort of a victim or killer kind of thing. It's just embarrassing.
Okay.
Frankly.
All right. But, well, then let's move. I mean, there's a reason why I didn't watch it, you know.
Oh, for sure. So. No, there's a reason why you didn't watch, and there's a reason why no one should have watched. And there's so much good stuff on, and there's so much good TV documentary programming on, and yeah, but a lot of people watched. So what you gonna say? I think 10 million people watched the first part, and 9 or 10 million watched the second part on CBS. So there's an appetite. Now I know better than to feed that appetite next time it's forced upon me.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about Lethal Weapon. A little bit. I didn't get through the entire first show. Where do you stand on it? Obviously, we're going back to Fox again, and we've already talked about Pitch. So,
well, everyone's got so much programming. There's nothing, you know, we can spend as much time on any network as we want, except CW, because they don't start until next week.
Right.
They started a little slow. I don't know. I thought it was pretty mindless, but not unentertaining, because McGee directed the pilot, and it sort of is colorful, and it moves quickly, and it's not good, but there's probably room for some fun. You know, at press tour, I asked McGee if really this was just a way for him to really get a chance to remake Fastlane, which was on Fox
right.
15 years ago.
Right,
and he laughed and talked about that, and no one remembers the existence of Fastlane.
I do. I used to watch that show.
Okay, see, and the people who remember it existed remember it fondly, and McGee did laugh when I asked about it. And the fact is, if you were to just call this show Fastlane 2016, I think probably it would have been received as the kind of brainless, innocuous fun that it's intending to be, as opposed to saddling it with the Lethal Weapon name, which has certain responsibilities. And, you know, Clint Crawford, who some people will know from Justified and some people should know from Rectify, because Rectify is awesome and everyone should watch Rectify, He plays the Mel Gibson part, and he's playing a sort of softer version of it, because Mel Gibson was nuts in the first couple of movies and in real life. But and then you have Damon Wayans, senior, playing the Glover role, and it's, you know, he's fine, and I think they're both fine together. It's just sort of more a buddy cop show than it is, honestly, Lethal Weapon. And Lethal Weapon became a buddy cop franchise, certainly by the third movie. And so this is more like that, I think. How far did you make it into it?
About half an hour.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it was to me, it was, I mean, it was just standard stuff that I've seen like 8 million times before. And I'm in the minority in the world. I don't like the Lethal Weapon franchise. I know. I only
like the first movie. I think the first movie has sort of merit because it really is kind of edgy and unhinged. The second movie, to me, gets genuinely unpleasant with its kind of xenophobia and nastiness. Yeah. And then the third and fourth movies are sub-disposable fluff. They're basically Rush Hour with a different name.
Yeah.
So in this case, you get the director of Rush Hour to come make a Lethal Weapon movie, and this is what you get.
Yeah.
So, not the director of Rush Hour. That's Brett Ratner.
That's Brett Ratner. McG.
No, you get the director of the Charlie's Angels.
Charlie's Angels movie. Yeah, there you go.
I had to think of what McG's defining credits are.
Yeah, We Are Marshall. How about We Are Marshall?
and even as a sucker for underdog sports movies, We Are Marshall falls a little short. It makes me a little misty at the end, but I can't deny that everybody chanting We Are Marshall, you know, gets me a little bit, but as a movie, not so.
No. All right. How are some of these shows doing, like Lethal Weapon? Did people tune in?
People tuned in for a fair number of the new shows. There was good sampling in the first week. Bull, for example, which is brutally bad, got very good sampling on CBS and also had a good second week. Kevin Can Wait, which is fairly bad, got good sampling in its first week and reasonably good in its second week, even on a night where everyone was obsessed about either getting ready for or recovering from the debate, depending on how things were going. So that got good sampling. This Is Us did very well. Airing after The Voice, and that's a good lead-in, but it did very well. And after one episode, NBC picked it up for a full season. So, I think it's going to do 18 episodes this year, I think is the number, but it got picked up immediately. So that's, that's a sign it's doing well. In terms of disasters, there are very few. Notorious on ABC is probably close to a disaster. It squandered half of its Grey's Anatomy lead-in, and it's just horrible. And so I'm not giddy about it doing poorly. I don't like for people to lose jobs and all of that. But on the other hand, it's an awful show. And so what you gonna say?
Yeah.
That didn't do well. But, Pitch did not so great. Yeah. The Good Place on NBC has had a couple airings that did reasonably well, and I think that's a really good show.
Yeah,
you watch that one?
Yeah, we're going to break. When we come back, I want to talk about it because I think it's great.
Excellent.
Yes.
Cool.
Let's take a quick break. We got the news coming up. Dan, hang on. Dan Feinberg is with us, and you can read him on The Hollywood Reporter, and you can check him out on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a really good show after the news called The Good Place. All right, we shall return. News is next. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It is Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. In just a few minutes, Jake the Snake Roberts is going to join us, legendary WWE wrestling superstar. Okay, before the news, we were talking. We talked for a little bit about some crappy stuff. But now we're going to talk about something really good. It's a show called The Good Place. It's on NBC. And I think it's really good. And being a really big fan of Kristen Bell, this show makes me very happy. So tell everybody about it, and we can talk a little bit more about it.
See, I was just worried that you hadn't brought it up, and I was thinking maybe you hadn't watched it.
No.
I didn't realize that you'd carefully arced it out for a kind of best for last kind of
That's
thing.
Exactly
I appreciate
right.
that.
That's exactly right.
No, I think it's really good, and the thing I like about it most is that I've watched 4 episodes of it now, and I still think it's good. And that, to me, is a sign of something very, very positive. It's created by Mike Schur, who created Parks and Recreation, co-created the very good Brooklyn Nine-Nine, worked for a long, 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 long time on The Office, etc. He's an extremely talented and funny guy, and it's a really, really smart and funny show about a woman, played by Kristen Bell, who dies and finds herself in The Good Place. And the only catch is she wasn't actually a very good person, and that is beginning to wreak havoc with the heaven in which she finds herself, which is a small kind of residential heaven with a kind of archangel of some sort, or whatever it is that you want to say, played by Ted Danson, overseeing it. And so she is in the position of either finding a way to become good and live up to her heaven, or to drag her heaven down to whatever her level is. And it is a surprisingly smart and inquisitive show regarding kind of ethics and good behavior and spirituality and concepts of good and moral absolutes. And it's also just a really funny, goofy show with lots of outside special effects and Kristen Bell, who is just so utterly, completely, marvelously charming that you're happy to watch her and happy that she has a vehicle that lets her do this.
Yeah. This is a, you know, I didn't expect it to be as sort of deep as it is. You know, I mean, I thought, oh, well, she's dead. It's going to be a wacky comedy about that. But it's not. I mean, this is about how we behave and how we live and how to be better. And I did not expect something relatively profound to come out of this show, and that's what
aspiring to that.
Yeah,
I really do think so.
And I didn't expect it. I expected wacky comedy, and it is funny. It's laugh out loud funny. And Ted Danson, of course, is Ted Danson, and he rules. And you know, the supporting characters are good, and the setup is really intelligent. It's really beautifully done. But you know, every episode that I've watched, when it's over, I just sit there and I kind of think, you know, and I think about, like, to the point where it's like, this is a show that points out how we could live a better life, like even the people watching it. And I was really moved by that, and I didn't expect that. And I think it's a terrific show.
The thing I like most about it is that because I am at all times doing 15 different things, as we all are, but let's be honest, I am not unique in that respect. It just happens that all 15 of the things that I'm doing at any given time are watching TV, whereas other people are doing other things. But yeah, it's a show where I am constantly rewinding to either see visual jokes that I didn't get. The first episode has an extended bit about the scoring system that gets you into
right.
The Good Place.
Right.
And if you do not pause that and spend 10 minutes looking at the fine print and reading every single thing and laughing, I don't know what to do with you. And it's so great. But also, every episode has had things where anytime my brain moves away from the show for a second, I see something that I realize was terrific, and I have to rewind to catch the entire setup of it.
Yeah.
Because it really is a show that is so much smarter than it necessarily needs to be, and smart in a way that's just intended towards humor. It is about living a better life, and it is about philosophy and ethics and philanthropy and all of that. But so much of what you're going to have to rewind is about the people who wrote the introduction to Kristen Bell's TV husband's book, you know, just little bits where you have to go back and see the jokes.
Yeah.
It's really clever. It's really well constructed. The first season is only going to be, I think, 13 episodes, but that's the plan. And so that's nice. It was given a 13 episode order early, and it will, you know, do those 13 episodes. And it feels like, at least in the early going, the show has enough material to keep going. And I think if you watch the pilot, you might not necessarily be sure of that. But having seen 4 episodes, I'm sure there's enough show here.
Yeah.
So I'm relieved by that.
Yeah, I think it's great. I really do. And I hope. And you said that people are actually watching it.
Some. It's not a hit, and NBC has weird comedy standards, and so it's hard to know. But it's doing reasonably well, and also Superstore, which I think is a really really decent show. It's not a spectacular show, but it's a show that does make me laugh, and it's a show that has a great cast and sometimes comes up with some really smart and perceptive things to say about working in America in 2016. So it's also doing decently, and so I would like for both of those shows to continue to do decently, because I think they're both well above average network comedies that are both funny and better than funny.
Yeah, Superstore, I can take or leave. I mean, and like you said, the ensemble's great. There's a lot of talented people in that show. I don't think it's nearly as good as The Good Place, but those two shows together it's a nice hour. All right, I'm interested in the Luke Cage, the Marvel thing on Netflix, and you've seen it.
I have indeed, and I think that it is a very good show, but I think that it also might tick some people off because I don't think it's a very good superhero show. And people who have watched Jessica Jones and Daredevil might have some sense of what that means, because Netflix has done certain very specific things with its Marvel shows that are very different from what Marvel has done on the big screen. And they've done these very specific New York City neighborhood shows with New York City neighborhood concerns. And so, you know, if you like Jessica Jones, which was kind of a feminist allegory about consent and female friendship and rape, it was a dark, dark show. And sometimes it had superhero elements because the main hero was all strong and the villain had mind control. Well, in this case, you also already know Luke Cage, played by Mike Coulter. And so this show basically takes that character from Jessica Jones and moves him back to his habitat in Harlem. And it's about gentrification. It's about black identity in Harlem in 2016. It's about a hero in the Black Lives Matter era, in which it is a genuinely political statement to have a hero walking through a building in a bullet-torn hoodie, being bulletproof. That is a statement right there. Mm-hmm. It's a powerful statement, and the show is about that kind of thing. It's also a great music show. The showrunner of it is Cheo Hadari Coker. He was a former music journalist, wrote for The Source and a bunch of other things, and I can't think of many shows that use music better than this. It's a fantastic use of hip-hop, but also Mahalia Jackson, Nina Simone. It is great soundtrack, and the soundtrack really, it fuels the show organically. But I don't know that I find Luke Cage interesting as a superhero.
Okay.
I find him interesting as a Pulp Fiction lead. And so, you know, I think some people will really love this, and I really dug it. But I think if you're looking for certain things, it may not necessarily fulfill those superhero things.
Okay. All right. Before we let you go, Dan, the finale of Big Brother. I was screaming at my television when Paul decided to kick James out and keep Nicole in. I was like, you're done, man. You're done.
You got to applaud him for making the dignified choice, for making the choice based on gameplay, not the person he could have beaten.
Yeah.
So, but I wonder, like, there was animus against Paul that I don't think we saw.
I agree. Yeah.
So my question is, whose votes would have changed away from James if Paul had chosen James?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think more people would have chosen Paul, because it seemed to me that the jurors were really trying to award the person who played the best game. And if it were James, I think almost every other, with the exception of Natalie, I think it would be overwhelming that the jurors would have chosen Paul simply because James was a floater. And I think they talked about that quite a bit.
I couldn't tell, because it felt like there was a lot of anti-Paul sentiment that was going through the house, particularly among the women.
Yeah.
Because of the way that he treated them. And I think that that turned a lot of the female jurors in Natalie's favor, and it helped that she had a resume that was a worthy resume.
Right.
And so I think she was a good winner, and I think she was obviously a good winner because I think that Paul gave people reasons to vote against him.
Yeah.
And that's on him. But I think a lot of people are bitter about the results.
I was angry.
A lot of people.
Yeah, I was angry. I was very angry. All right, Dan, always a pleasure. I am going to be off the week that we were scheduled to have you on in a couple of weeks.
Good for you.
But thank you. And the week after we'll have you on. So in about 3 weeks, we'll have you back on. Okay.
Excellent. I will store up so many TV opinions. It'll blow your mind.
All right, Dan. Thanks a lot.
Pleasure, Nick.
Cool. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Take a break. When we come back, Jake the Snake Roberts will join us.